Welcome to another episode, another session today. We have with us, as part of this Brewer Roundtable chat thing, I have three guests. So as I'm looking at this, I don't know how it shows on the screen, but next to me here is Misho from Cojones Brewery in Bulgaria. You're in Sofia, is it? Or are you?
We're based in Sofia, yeah.
Okay, and below him is Adam from First Craft Brew in Budapest.
Budapest, yes.
Yeah, in Hungary. And then we have Augustinus from Green Monster in Kaunas in Lithuania.
Yeah.
So what we're doing, as usual, is we're just going to have a chat here. And and we'll just see what the beer scenes are like in each country and what's similar, what's different, you know, just whatever comes up. So maybe the best thing first is maybe if you can just introduce yourselves, give a little background to the brewery where you why you started. Misho, do you want to kick it off?
Absolutely. Well, my name is Mikhail Durchev. I'm the owner and I can say I'm still the head brewer of Cojones. And we're based in Sofia, Bulgaria. And we started like in 2018, late 2018, but we had a few problems. So basically our first beers went on the market in 2019. As in the size of the brewery, we're like mid-sized for our market. We have a three-vessel 700-liter brew house with seven fermenters, double size. And pretty much now since maybe 3 or 4 months, maybe more, we now also can our beers. So we have pretty much everything. We can bottle, we can, and so on. So, yeah, but basically that's it.
Adam, how about you? How long are you around?
First was founded in 2017. We started brewing then. The first, 18 months or so was the pilot time, the setup for a system. And after that, we hired a new head brewer, Matej, who's been with us since then. And We were one of the bigger ones in the craft market when we opened. We had a 2,000-liter brew house with four vessels and 15 fermenters. And, these are the basics, I guess.
Okay. So, Augustinus, you were one of the first in Lithuania as well, were you? First craft brewery.
One of the first, not the first one, but one of the first. We started about 2013 under different name. It was called Apennine Brewery. It translates as hop, literally hop in English. It was a small family, one family brewery. Then about 2 years ago, the ownership changed, and when we decided to rebrand for another name, the Green Monster is one of our beers, the most known one beer, one of the first IPA style beers in Lithuania. So it was more recognizable. I started working at Green Monster, the brewery, as a brewer. I came from home brewers. First started brewing at home, and when there was an ad at the brewery, so I joined it, and now I am a brewer, also managing director.
Yeah, just on the name there, I believe at one time, because I don't know if you know Lars Marius Garshall, and he has this whole Lithuanian thing. He chases around farmhouse brewing and all the Lithuanian, the Nordic countries, and he got very confused because I believe there was three breweries with the same name in Kaunas.
Yeah. And one of another brewery called Apennines is about 1 kilometer away from us. So there is a lot of mix-ups. But they are more the traditional style, the country style brewery. So if someone knows our beers, there is easy to differentiate.
Yeah, but if you don't know and you just want something, it probably was a good good idea to change the name, really.
Yeah.
So, so, I mean, Nisho, you were mentioning there about that you can and bottle. Is that?
Yeah.
Or I'm just thinking, like, the last time we had a chat here, now we were talking about cans and bottles as well, and just because you mentioned it.
Yep.
Are cans or bottles most acceptable in Bulgaria? Because some places are...
Well, still the market in Bulgaria is more orientated towards the bottles. Okay. We're still not that, you know, people still consider the cans being some of a witchery from the mainstream beers and something like this. So their perception for cans still, I mean the market as a whole perceives the cans as something cheap. Where in the craft beer scene, you can see that people are now already coming to love the cans. They see what is the positive side of canning your beer. So yeah, it's starting to develop. It's starting to develop really, and also the COVID and the war now helped a lot, because all the imported beers that we get from big breweries, from Germany, from Czech Republic, it all comes in cans. So I'm pretty sure that in maybe a year or two, things are going to change here, and we're going to see the same thing we're seeing on the western end, let's say, where everything is in cans.
Yeah, because cans kind of, once they seem to hit a tipping point, they dominate everything then.
To be honest, for me, I love bottles, but still I cannot deny the positive aspects of the can.
Yeah.
In both aspects, in brewing and also in, let's say, in terms of shipping and so on, it's really easier to ship beer that is in cans.
And that's the same in Lithuania, pretty much, isn't it? It's mainly...
There are quite a demand for bottles too, especially in bigger markets. Our bigger shopping markets. Also, some bars like bottles more. But if the bar is more oriented to the craft beer, they go only for cans, because they recognize that it is better container for craft beer. Yeah.
Yeah,
but Hungary.
That's same here. Yeah,
yeah. Hungary is it different in Hungary? Because Adam, because all the beers that you sent us, they were all cans. So is that, do you only do cans?
No, we're bottling and canning as well, and it's really similar. It's a weird market right now because craft beer consumers already know the difference between cans and bottles and the positive aspects of canning, and they are looking for cans, and like two-thirds of craft beer breweries are only canning now. But all restaurants, cafes, stuff like that, they do not put cans in their assortment because they believe that the consumers believe that that canned beers are, I don't know, inferior. So bottling is a must, and we've always been a Horeca-heavy brewery, focusing more on pubs and stuff. So we need to bottle still. We see that it's going to be a really, really long and slow change, but we are working on changing it towards only canning.
Yeah, well, to be honest, it makes sense for a restaurant, I think. Yeah, like if you're paying for a lot of money for a meal and that, the can, and they bring out a can, I know it's only aesthetics, but it is, aesthetics are important. Like, so people put it down.
Yeah, you think so, but this stuff is not only for, you know, like high end restaurants, many bars and I don't know, pubs for students and stuff like that. Those places also are into bottles, which is not really reasonable.
Yeah, that surprises me. I can see it for like a high-end restaurant, and you know, they don't want to put a can on.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and we will, like I said, sorry,
I got one comment from one bar that we offered our beer. He said that I asked about cans. He said no, there will be no cans in our bar. It's a regular dive bar. He said that he thinks that you can drink can and under the bridge, but not in bar. That's all perception.
Yeah.
So people who thinks like that, yeah.
Yeah, anytime I've been to Lithuania, it's always, I think there's only one lot of cans I think I ever remember. It's whatever that, what's the craft brand of Švitteris that they have?
Raudonas Plytas, it's a yeah. Red Brick brewery, yeah.
Yeah, I've seen them in cans, but everything else is bottles, everything I've ever seen.
Yeah, but our small craft brewery is also moving to canning. I think every brewery, except Dundulis, maybe everyone moved to canning. They are still bottling, including us, but everyone invested in canning machines and moving to that direction because the whole craft scene is moving to that to that direction. Yeah.
So. So what is the beer scene? What's popular in each country? That is it the same? Like coming to you, Adam. Like I mean, I know there's a lot of. Well, you had the West Coast and East Coast IPAs, but there's a lot of pastry. I mean, was that something that's very very popular there now? Or
yeah, it's relatively new. Also, not many breweries started making pastry sours and pastry styles before, so it's like a 2 year. During COVID, it's really interesting that during COVID, not many breweries closed, which is a relief because of the the small breweries persevered, but they had time, to experiment. So a lot of new micro styles popped up during the last 2 years or 3 years now. And one of this is pastry stouts, pastry showers coming into style. I think IPAs and New England IPAs are still over the top, I think, everywhere. I guess, but sours especially are really getting trendy. Many of the well-known and nationwide craft breweries are making sours, kettle sours mostly, and of course pastry styles become so popular, and not just here. I don't know about the others will tell about their market as well, I think. But when we go to or when we apply to any beer festivals, either in Hungary or abroad, there's always a suggestion that we should bring another batch of pastry stouts because people love them anywhere, everywhere.
Yeah, do you see that as well? Are they popular in Bulgaria?
Well, in Bulgaria, yeah, it's pretty. That's funny because in Bulgaria it's pretty much the same. Still, the IPA, mostly the New England IPA, is the most popular style here. It's most of the beer drinkers prefer the New England IPA, but still also the sour beers, they're also very popular compared also with the imperial stouts. In Bulgaria, I think it's safe to say that we don't brew that much imperial stouts, and most of the brewers, they focus on either some kind of a hazy IPA or a sour, a pastry sour. Actually, if we go, let's say, year and a half ago, the pastry beers were really, really popular in Bulgaria, where now it started to go away a bit.
Okay.
Now people prefer, because when you do a pastry, all kinds of pastry, what you use mostly? You use lactose. Now people are like, okay, but I don't want to drink a beer that is with lactose and it's really popular, the lactose intolerance and so on. So they now kind of prefer a bit not that sweet beers. But in general, it's pretty much like in Hungary. Okay. I mean, And we do have some imperial stouts, but they're not that much. They're not that much.
Okay. Yeah. Pretty similar in Lithuania, also new trends of pastry beers also quite popular here. Hoppy beers, New England style IPAs, but there is always some talk about let's get back to something simple, drinkable, and not so sweet and cloying, but. I don't see so much demand for it. Some are, but not so much. Everyone wants some kind of new beer. New beers also always popular in bars, in shops. Everyone wants new label, new something new. Yeah.
So is Untappd very popular there? So.
It's the most popular rating app for 5 years. Yeah,
that seems to drive an awful lot of you have to tick off the next beer and
collect the badges and so on. Yeah.
You don't care about tasting, even if you like the beer, they don't taste it a second time. I've heard people complain, but also have mixed feelings about Untappd because they say it's great. Then you can show, it does generate interest in that. But it does this force you on this whole. You brew a beer that you're really proud of, you really like, people like it, but then they just, it's the next thing, the next thing, the next thing. And they just.
I 100% agree with you. I'm also not a big fan of Untappd.
Yeah.
I think, well, the thing is, here in Bulgaria, you can always see, let's say, 2, 3, 4 guys buying one can, just split it in four, and then say, I already tried that beer, which for me personally, as a longtime beer drinker and as a brewer, you can pretty much say you tried a beer if you just had like 100 ml of it.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's for me the... That's what I don't like about Untappd. On the other hand, I really liked red beer. I don't know why it died a bit in the last years, because it forces you to write a review, to go in deep, not just click, put a scoring can, let's go.
Yeah.
But still, it's not up to us to decide what's popular, what's not.
Yeah, but does that affect you, like? Do you feel a need then that say you really like a beer and you'd like to devote a bit of time to that or to maybe perfecting it, that you have to create a new beer all the time? Do you feel like under pressure on that? Or
for me, our market is now also, let's say, when we started the brewery, it was like most of the bars, most of the restaurants, also including the craft beer bars and so on, they wanted to have like more of the core range. So you guarantee that you have this beer all the time. And now it kind of switched. And now we're seeing what we're seeing, let's say, in the US, where people buy a beer, try it, rate it, let's move to the next one. Yeah. So for us, that's the race. Always bring something new, always bring something interesting, something fresh and so on, which in terms of brewing, in organizing the whole production and so on, it is hard. Yeah, it is hard. Especially when you're like a small brewery like us, because, you only have a limited number of fermenters. So,
so it's all scheduling is hard. So just going on about that, sorry. I have to ask you, Misho, about you, because you had a big post I saw in Bulgaria. You caused a bit of a fuss there last week. I wanted to ask
you
about people, if I understood, if Facebook translated it correctly and all of that, you were giving out that, is there a big thing in Bulgaria that brewers who basically import beer and just then relabel it or something?
Well, it's safe to say It's safe to say it was. It was. It's not that big anymore. Again, when COVID started, it was really a lot of Bulgarian brands that were getting their beer brewed in all over Europe, you know, Netherlands, Belgium, Italy, whatever. So, and they just imported into Bulgaria. So, but now kind of a slowdown, just because now the local market and people now want to drink something that is fresh, that is brewed in Bulgaria. And it's not only only with beer. We see now that people prefer to consume, let's say, food, drinks, and so on that are grown, made, and so on here in Bulgaria. And this whole post, it was about this. I don't have anything against contract brewers. I have a problem when you don't have a brewery and you want to market your beer and your brand as a brewery, and also to just keep the truth from the client, telling that it's made in Bulgaria when it's not. I don't see a problem just to come and say, hey, I brew in the Netherlands. For me, that's not a problem. Actually, we have lots of big names in the craft beer scene, like Mikkeller, like Omnipole, like Tuo, and so on, that actually shaped our industry, that were actually contract brewers. And I don't see a problem with this.
Yeah, what do you think? Do you see anything like that with people, as I sound like, you know, misrepresenting, maybe is a strong word, maybe it's not a strong word.
The problem in this specific situation with those guys is that not only us, but also other colleagues, so we tried several times to, let's say, send them some feedback that that's not okay, that it's not good, it's not helping the market at all, and so on, but they just, maybe they believe it's safe to just let it go and don't answer anything and don't take any actions and so on. So for us also, because we actually write that post on Facebook, but actually we are backed by some other brewers also. So it's not just our opinion, it's like a collective opinion of our local brewers association.
Yeah, because I know, like in the spirit world, you know, gins and whiskeys and that's a huge thing. People just rebrand, you know, that they put their own brand.
Yeah. For me, that's, I don't know. I mean, I know it's business, but for me, you should try and sell it the right way. If you just go to a brewery and get some of their beers, get it relabeled, you just have to state that it's a relabeled beer. Don't go around saying that that's your beer, that's your own recipe, and so on. And also, if you brew in the Netherlands, come and say, hey, I brew in the Netherlands. Actually, it's really easy to defend this, let's say, in front of the customers, because now you see our local craft beer scene is, it started maybe like 7-8 years ago, but it's blooming in the past, let's say, 2 years. Now things are starting to change. You know, pretty much all of us changed their initial brewing setup. We bought better equipment, bigger equipment, and so on. So now it's starting to develop. And for us, that's the thing. Still, we cannot, say that we have the same breweries like in the Netherlands, for example. So it's really easy to defend that you're brewing in the Netherlands just because, you know, you're brewing on a high-end equipment.
Yeah.
The brewer that did this beer is like somebody that has maybe 15 years of experience. So for me, just to go and try to hide this from the customer, try to, let's say, go go, let's say, easy and say, hey, we are a Bulgarian brewery. We brew our beer here in Bulgaria. It's Bulgarian beer. That's a nonsense for me.
Yeah,
it's about deception and correct information for your clients.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, when you go to, let's say, to a restaurant, to a bar, and because that's the feedback that I have from our distributor, that now more and more restaurants, when they try to sell, because he's importing all of the big brands from all over the world, and what he tells me, it's something that I also see in our work when trying to go and sell to a restaurant or to a bar, is that now our local restaurants and bars, they prefer to have something that it's brewed in Bulgaria, just because maybe the clients want this.
Yeah.
And when you go there and you say, hey, do you want this beer? Is it brewed in Bulgaria? Oh, yeah, it is. Okay, I'll buy it. So that's the thing. For me, it's plain and simple. If you want to have to call your brand Bulgarian brewery and to be a Bulgarian beer or whatever, Hungarian, Lithuanian, just make the brewery, man. Let the money stay in the country. You're helping your own economy by doing this. So for me, that's simple.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is raising a big thing. Like, I mean, because I've seen, like, people seem to be okay that there is, you want the new fancy thing from maybe from abroad or, you know,
yeah,
from
big absolutely, yeah.
There's that. But there's also a maybe trend, I don't know if you're seeing it, but towards, yeah, local beers. You know, you want something local, and that you wouldn't be saying it's a Bulgarian beer in Bulgaria if people weren't looking for a Bulgarian beer. Or
yeah, that's the thing. Absolutely, people will always want something that it's imported. Of course, I'm also not drinking only Bulgarian beers. Don't get me wrong. I love to try something different to, you know, check where we are standing in the moment in terms of brewing. And for me, that's the thing. If people will buy this beer, even if you say that you're brewing it, I don't know, on Mars, they'll still drink it. I don't know what's the problem. So, but to,
yeah,
you know, try to decept the people and all the customers, that's, for me, that's not okay.
Yeah. It also brings up, it's a story I've mentioned a couple of times to people, but we had, I don't know if you know, if you've heard of Killarney, it's in Ireland, it's one of the most popular tourist towns. Mm-hmm. What he was saying is, in Killarney Brewery there, is that they could not get the local pubs to stock them until tourists started asking for the local beer.
Yeah.
And it's a weird thing, like, the locals weren't really drinking it because, well, the ones who went into their tap room were, but the rest of them couldn't get it. But then it was only when people came in looking for the local beer that it forced the pubs to stock them, and then
something similar happening right now in Bulgaria. We actually have a couple of bars that their business model is towards all the tourists that come to Sofia. So when they started, it was really funny because when I was talking to the owner, and he said, okay, so when a foreigner comes into the bar, he says, give me something that is Bulgarian. And because they also import beers from England. And what he told me is, now all the tourists, they drink only Bulgarian craft beer. And the locals, they drink the British, the Dutch, and so on. So it's funny, yeah.
Do you see that as well, Adam? Is that, like, are the locals looking for something? I suppose you're always looking for something exotic, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely, yes. But I think Hungary is even, I don't know, a bit full of, like, too full of breweries. There are 150 breweries that are active, including three giant international companies, and they are licensing the Czech and German beer. So no import, but they are brewing inbound in the country. So there are a ton of local beers nationwide. And people are looking for local beers, but there's, like, a really, really great spectrum of them. So So I think they're happy. Foreigners, tourists also looking for Hungarian beers. What is funny that they're not only looking for Hungarian beers, but in the last few weeks, we have two bars in the downtown. So the brewery is like northern Budapest, a bit outside. And we have two bars in the downtown. And tourists started to ask for not only local beers, but Budapest-themed beers. So like most of the craft breweries in Budapest, we're also naming our beers in English, you know, because okay. we, of course, yeah. want to export them. We want to go to festivals and stuff like that. But they are looking for something named in Hungarian or named about Budapest and stuff like that. Whoever does that. So it's a blast and a curse, of course, that there are so many breweries, Hungarian breweries right now.
Yeah, I suppose. I guess I can see that. Like, I mean, there's a certain competition then, but you're also, everyone's raising awareness. So that's the positive side.
Yes, and there's like a really good connection between the breweries. So it's more like on the happy side, because we know we want to work together. There are three big Hungarian craft beer festivals, and almost all of the new wave craft breweries are almost always invited to those. Okay. So there's like a real friendly vibe.
Right. And do you do a lot of beer festivals within your countries or outside, or do you like all? How about you, Adam? Yeah, you're going to all the beer festivals in Hungary. Do you do a lot of
before
as well?
Before COVID, we went to almost everywhere. They say that Hungary is a wine country, but we've also become a beer country as well. So there is like a beer festival like every second town during the spring or early autumn. So we went to a lot of those ones. We're also organizing one of the big ones in Budapest, and we just started last year exporting and looking for festivals abroad. So that's still in baby steps, but we're also going to Sofia this year. I believe really? We have when? Our spot there. I don't know it's July, I think.
You're coming for the Balkan Beer
Bash? For the Beer Fest. Uh-huh. The Beer Bash, yes.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, yeah. Nice.
We're going to Finland this year, so it's a really new thing for us to do.
Right. And do you, like, I've always been wondering, I'm going to grab you while I have you here. Like, beer festivals, how are they profitable in themselves for you, or is it just purely, like, there's an awful lot of effort to get there to do the thing. Is it just purely that you want to get out of the brewery and go meet people, or what?
I think in itself, I don't know if I'm speaking in the others, but for the others, but I don't think that a festival in itself can be so profitable to pursue all of them. It's profitable because, of course, we want to be there. We want to see others, we want to try it. And it's profitable because if the brewery is ready for exporting, then these are the places that... So I don't know if there must be or there should be networking places, but the best networking is always around beer, at beer festivals, talking about beer, having connection, starting to think about tap takeover, starting to think about collaboration beers. So I think that's why it's a must have for a brewer who wants to export, of course, to go to beer festivals. And of course for the vibes, because there are just so many good ones there.
Yeah, no, that's why I was wondering. Like, it always struck me that, yeah, I can see the benefit. Like, you just want to get out, you want to meet people, you want to do all that. And then you've seen what new, maybe some beer styles you haven't met, and you do all that. But yeah, I could never see where anyone made money on this, except maybe the festival organizer or something.
Not all the time, by the way.
I guess local breweries can. Yeah. Sorry.
I don't. Sorry to interrupt. Yeah.
So I just thought that local breweries can make money, I guess. But for foreigners, including all the logistics, shipping, stuff like that, that just takes such a big pile out of the money that truly it's about just being there.
But You see, did you organize a beer festival as well? Did I see somewhere on?
Sorry,
were you organizing a beer festival in Kaunas?
No, we only participated in few here in Lithuania. Last year, we went to Latvia at Nurme Brewery. They made a small craft beer festival on their brewery birthday. So yeah, the main thing about the festivals, like Adam said, that's a great opportunity to meet other brewers, to organize collabs, maybe some one or another bar owner to introduce yourself. And the main vibe is to meet the people who love your beer, to talk directly to them. That's the main positive emotion, to receive feedback and so on.
Yeah, no, makes sense. Yeah, it was just something that's always been at the back of my mind. I thought I'd ask there. What else did I have? That there was actually, I'm going to come back to back to you, Augustinus, because like Adam was saying there, that you know, Hungary was typically a wine country, and I think Bulgaria would be fair to say it was as well.
Absolutely.
The wine countries that maybe, you know, big beers came in, and now it's becoming craft beer. But Lithuania's always had, it's very much a beer country, and it's had traditional beer.
Well, it's the main drink of a night usually is a beer, but there is very still quite conservative public. They like beer, but more on the traditional German lager side of beer. So craft beer is slowly. Growing, but there is still some quite big population that if you think that you want to drink beer, it's usually light lager type of beer.
But so, there's a lot of farmhouse brewers still.
Yes, there is big tradition. In the northern eastern side of Lithuania, that is very famous for farmhouse beers and so on. But you usually can't find them in big cities in bars. You can find them only if you go to the country.
Okay.
There are small exceptions, but it's very rare.
Yeah. I was wondering whether that's. It seems to be getting a lot of attention from outside of Lithuania. I wonder whether it's
usually people know that. I tasted some the real beer that was made by some old guy in the country that was great, but usually it don't have big demand.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's usually unboiled as well, if I remember correctly. So it doesn't last very long.
Yeah. It's quite hard to maybe on the whole technological side for bars to keep pouring them, because they go bad very very, very fast.
Yeah,
they must be fresh. So it's on the logistics side, it's maybe almost impossible. But maybe that kind of beers more popular when you go to the events, to the small town fairs, or you go on the so-called beer road. To go through small breweries in that country, that way you can taste the traditional old style farmhouse beers, but not in the shops or bars.
Yeah, I guess it comes back to the whole thing of like tourists wanting the local beers that the locals really don't want. They want something else.
Something, yeah. something new, something exciting, something fresh, something fruited, sour, triple hopped, something.
Yeah, and then it'll all be gone. And unfortunately, the tourists might keep it alive.
Yeah.
Yeah, talking about technology and the whole thing, I have to come back to you again, Michaud. I know it's probably you could tell me if it's a gimmick or not, but you released a beer that was designed by ChatGPT.
By an AI, yeah. Well, actually it's how we say it. All from the recipe through the label, all the texts, also all the press releases to the media, everything was done by an artificial intelligence. Actually, it was an idea that my brother had just to try and see what will happen, and it turned out that this technology is really advanced. Because okay, now speaking of beer, we all know that the recipe for a lager, it's not that hard. It's not like you're doing something with lots of malts and lots of hops and so on. The recipe as a recipe is like not that hard. The thing is to brew it the right way. So we wanted to do some lager for quite some long time. So now was the time. And yeah, we just decided to see what will happen. So we stick to the this recipe, and it turned out that it's actually not that bad. The ChatGPT, actually the beer is really drinkable, really good. We had like really good feedback from the customers. Actually the recipe is pretty much the same that our head brewer said he would go for. So the thing is with this AI that I think it's really fast advancing and developing and upgrading itself. So yeah, that's really nice. And about the label, for me that was the showstopper, the label. The label was usually, we also have one of the biggest advertising agencies in Bulgaria, but still when we have to do a label for our beers, it takes about 3-4 weeks, and the AI did it in 2 days. So for me, in terms of production, that's awesome, you know. And the label itself, it's really nice. It's really, really complex. It's not something that is just, you know, plain simple. No, it is really, really nice.
Okay, I suppose there's a couple of things to unpack there, guys. I don't know if you want to jump in, but I mean, so you did a lager recipe. Would you say from what did it just pick kind of a generic? Did it give you a generic lager recipe?
To be honest, yeah. No, you try to, let's say, help it a bit. You just tell him what should the final volume be, what's the alcohol content that you want, and what else? I just said it, I want it to be with American hops, just to be something a bit different. So, but yeah, the recipe itself, it's kind of a basic lager, 100% Pilsner, two-step mash.
Right.
Nothing fancy, but actually it works.
But yeah, I guess I'm wondering what the other guys are thinking about this. Like, I mean, because you're coming up with your own recipes normally. I mean, that's the creative part. Does this, like, I can see, and I know if you're a designer, I can see, say, designing labels, say, like, you know, I know this is one of Adam's, like, or any of that. So designing labels takes time, and, you know, if you're a designer, it's lucrative work. But from this, it sounds like you could replace all your designers, but you might still want to keep your own brewer is designing your own recipes. I'm just trying to see where
Yeah, if I think the recipe is only maybe less than half of the work. The whole work is in the small things that the brewer does. The whole process control and so on. That's where the main quality of the beer comes. Also, if you do something complex, you need to merge different tastes and fruits with malt and so on. Maybe there is quite a lot of work on the recipe, but on the like Misha said, with basic lager, maybe not so much in the recipe, but the whole concept to make a beer.
Absolutely.
Make a beer designed by AI, it sounds interesting.
To be honest with you, I don't think that it's still that that advanced to, let's say, get rid of the human part in the process. Because for me, the recipe, but I always said that the recipe is maybe even less than 50%, because no, if you do a good fermentation, you do your job in the brewing process, and you have a lousy recipe, you will get a better beer than the opposite way around. If you take some award-winning recipe, but you don't know the hell what are you doing, it won't turn out. Actually, I can say this from my own experience, because starting to brew years ago when I was a home brewer, what I did is I just downloaded recipes from let's say some US brewers or others that won like multiple gold medals, and I was like, okay, now I'm gonna brew it and it's gonna be a hell of a beer, and they turn out not that great. That's not like personal, but it was not that great. So for me, that's it. The recipe, actually, you can find a decent recipe for a beer. There was so much sources. Also, one of the leading names in the craft beer scene, they just handed out all their recipes, like Mikkeller, like Brewdog, and so on. So the recipe is not the thing. For me, the mastery is in the process itself. How to control the fermentation, how to, let's say, prepare the wort for the yeast, keep it healthy, to know what you need to have in the beer in order to achieve a good finished product. And also in terms of the label, yeah, maybe you can swap your designer with an AI. The thing is, I don't think that this personal touch, the artistry that is in every label that is made by a human, I don't think you can achieve this with an AI. Yeah, you can, let's say, for simpler beers or for something that you don't want, like some crazy label, or you want to just keep it simple. Yeah, maybe you can do it with an AI, but still, I think it needs some more time to be able to, let's say, replace the human part of the process. And also, I don't think that the whole thing with the AI is, namely, this, to replace the humans, more so to be like a really advanced tool that just saves you time in terms of, writing texts, because in text writing it's really, really good. Actually, I was really astonished how good it is. So for me, that is just another tool that is to help us be better and be faster, let's say.
Yeah. Mm. It's interesting to hear, because I mean, I know, like I said, probably this stage, but making the point about it being the whole AI, the whole thing, that's what your marketing is, just trying to get things. But there is something behind it.
Yeah. I don't know. It is interesting, just because for us, it was actually, because it was my brother's idea. He was like, when the whole this ChatGPT started, like the I don't know what it was, last October or something like this, when they launched it in beta, and he was trying to, you know, get to know it, to write some texts and so on. So one day he just said, okay, why don't you do a beer with an AI? I was like, okay, why not? Let's try. Let's see. For me, it was really interesting how it's gonna turn out. And it turned out it's really, really good. Really good. And for people, because we always try to, our concept is not just to brew beer. I want to have something, some story behind every beer, to have something that, because we all know that there are stories behind the beers. Every beer that we brew, there is something. You sit down with your colleagues, you thought about the recipe, the name has some meaning for you as brewers. So that's what we are trying to do, actually. And for us, the storytelling part of the things is really important. It's really important. So this thing with the AI, it was like something interesting, something that nobody did before us in Bulgaria. So it was like, okay, let's see what's going to happen, how people will react to this.
And was it well received?
Oh, yeah. It was interesting. Now, don't get me wrong. We didn't kill the market with sales just because it was AI generated. But it was interesting. It was something new. We always tried before to make some crazy beers that we knew that are not going to be the next bestseller, let's say, because we have a beer with ghost pepper, with a local chili farm, chili peppers farm called Chili Hills. And the concept of the beer was to be undrinkable, to be crazy hot. Yeah, which in terms of sales, if you see it from this perspective, you gotta be crazy to do it. But still, we have the other main sellers in our portfolio. So it's not a problem for me to launch a beer like this. And actually, it turned out really funny because people are buying it just to try and screw some of his friends, let's say, give him something and say, try it. And then he will be gasping for air in the next 30 minutes. So, yeah, but it's funny. And actually, based on the concept that it's going to be undrinkable, actually, it's selling very well because of this.
But you're probably back to your untapped crowd there again, so all ticking it off. But I'm just fascinated by, because like you said, this is all early stages and some of it's gimmicky and some of it's, I just really interested, like, would you go back and do, would you see AI doing some work in your brewery? What would
in terms of the texts? Yeah, the text itself, for the labels, but for online posts, for this thing, maybe we can use it. It's actually really helpful to help you with the, let's say, to go over the text you wrote, all the punctuation and stuff like this, because it's really helpful for this thing. Now, for the recipes, of course, I won't use it. I mean, I tried it with a New England IPA recipe and it failed miserably. Okay. It was, it crashed like hell. But for this thing, I'm not going to use it for the recipes. After all, our head brewer has enough experience, so I'm not thinking to replace him with the ChatGPT. For the labels, maybe yes, but what we discussed with our designers is that it's a useful tool just to make some fragments from the label and just to help them out in terms of, let's say, of time consumed, because this thing is working really fast. And what our designer told me is that if he wants to do it by himself, it will take some time for him, maybe week or some more when the AI does it in pretty much in hours. So for him, for labels, that's going to be really helpful to help him out with some fragments, but still, it's craft beer. I want to keep the living human in the process. I don't want to go away and so on.
How about you guys? Any plans do you think you're going to... Are you happy?
Yeah, we will try it also, especially like said in label creating side. Yeah.
But yeah, but beer recipes, the beer. That's
no, not so much. maybe after some time when the AI will. We'll have more craft beers, so it can design better recipes.
Yeah, I wonder will there be a new big trend like a West Coast IPA or something that will come out of it. Someone will come up with a new style of beer.
It's very interesting because the concept itself is not that strange. You know, we had as guests a bunch of people last year from a Polish brewery, and they own the brewery and they are using the brewery, but they don't have their own brand. Everyone there is a contract brewer. Everyone brings their own recipes, but they are the ones who are brewing it, fermenting, and canning. So they only use the equipment, and that's not really that far from the concept of, you know, like generating a recipe, because someone from the outside brings you the concept in, maybe. And of course, in modern automated breweries also, like there's an invisible hand that takes over part of the process. So it's not that far away, I think, from everyday beer making. But it's really, you know, for me, it was strange to think about, as I always thought about it as a social thing, to make and consume beer. So that was interesting. One of the guys brought the idea in, like in early January. So how about we design labels from now on? But I think and we might in the future, but currently the technology is still not that advanced to imitate styles. You know, if we would have like from every brew a changing style of label, I think we could like change from for tomorrow for an AI. But as most breweries, including us, have their own well-known styles of design of graphics on their labels, we couldn't find anything that could imitate that, even like a bit. So I think we're still going to stick to graphic designers, and of course I'm not really into it, because you know I read an article that said that the first 20 jobs today I would take over would all be like teachers' jobs. So we have time.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah,
time to adapt. Yeah,
and you know that brewing automation is expensive, so also the brewer should not be afraid of this. So
keep labor force.
Yeah, only if you work for a really really big brewery, then you're screwed.
Yeah, well, I mean, then you're back to the craft being an artisan.
The craft itself, absolutely.
Yeah, it's the craft itself that people are... And like you said, it's the stories behind the beer, the stories behind the brewers and how they made it and, you know, how they set up. Like what we're talking here, you know, where the breweries came from and how you got around to setting them up. That's what drives an awful lot.
To be honest with you, what I, from my experience... Every time we go to some event or somewhere, when someone approaches and wants to ask a question, it's like 99% of the time it's the story of the brewery itself, our stories, how we started brewing, how we build the brewery and so on, and it's not like okay, what's the recipe of the beer? How did you do it? It's more like, why did you decided to do a beer like this? And for me, that's the beauty of the craft beers.
Yeah,
that you have a story for every brand, for every beer, and that's it. You're not brewing something that it's just one beer for the past 200 years or so. You're just doing something that it's pretty much every time new, pretty much every time exciting, and so on. And yeah, that's the cool thing. And yeah, you have the opportunity to get in touch with the guys that are doing it, just because, you know, with the big brands, you cannot pretty much see a CEO of a big beer company going on an event and selling the beer, where with the craft beers, it's pretty much doable.
Yeah, yeah. So where do you think that the beer scene's going in at the moment, or where do you think it's going to go? I mean, you were saying in Bulgaria, it's going away from the pastry stouts.
Well, slowly, yeah. Slowly, yeah. But just because at some point it was all about the lactose. IPA with lactose. Lagers with lactose. Lactose with lactose. It was crazy, you know. And the thing is that we tried to... there were some beers that were undrinkable because of this. Now it's kind of going away. And now our local beer scene, it's more towards like... It's like really mixed, because at one hand, you have the more drinkable beers. Still, you want a New England IPA, okay, but don't do it triple dry hopped and 9% ABV or something like this. Just they want to drink something that is refreshing, that is drinkable, that it's not a higher alcoholic beer. And that's it. That's maybe for the wider audience when the hardcore craft drinkers, they just want the opposite. Make something that is crazy, like triple, quadruple, and so on. So it's really funny, because on the one hand, you're doing like, let's say them drinkable beers, but on the other hand, you think about doing something that is crazy, that like you try to combine, like always try to combine something that is not typical for a beer. Actually, we're doing a stout right now, an imperial stout that is with marshmallow and truffles, which is like, you know, it's a bit crazy, but we'll see it. It's going well for now. Okay. We'll see when we launched how it's going to be. But that's my point. In Bulgaria, it's we're trying to organically chase the Western market. It's the trends on the in the West, let's say in Netherlands, in the UK, they're coming to Bulgaria a bit late, but they're still coming to Bulgaria. Still, the seltzers are not that popular.
Yeah, I don't think seltzers made it anywhere outside of America, really.
Yeah, maybe, yeah, absolutely.
Thank God.
Yeah, but yeah, it's interesting here that that's flipped, because yeah, I keep hearing, you know, that sessionable beers are much more in demand.
Yeah,
not just fall over after one, like they want to have two or three.
Yeah. And actually, that's what's selling best at our local market. That's what's selling best at our local market, just because, yeah, you can drink more than one.
Yeah.
You can drink more than one, and it's, yeah, as the name suggests, it's sessionable. It's,
yeah. Yeah. Is that the same in Hungary? Are you seeing the same split, or where do you think it's going in, or in Budapest, like you said, maybe that's even a more specific market?
Yeah, currently, I think fruited sours are the way right now. That's of course partly because of most of them are like low ABV and just refreshing for the summer, but it's still a new thing. We've been doing brewery tours for like, I don't know, 5 years now. That's why we're first. So just to clarify, we weren't the first craft brewery Hungary, but we were the first to build it around the tap room and have the space for larger groups even take a look around in the brewery. So like first, I don't know, see-through brewery. And in these groups, I don't know, we take around a few hundred people a month. And we can see how more and more people know at least about sour beers. You know, brewer tours are not only for hardcore beer geeks, stuff like that. People who are interested in beer or drink beer every day come to us, and most of them have never heard about sour beers. And in the last, I don't know, half a year maybe, it started to change. People started to, you know, like throw up their hands. Yeah, I tried it. And many of the breweries are looking for the summer as a space to fill it with their own fruited ones. And pastry sours or pastry stouts will stay with us as well because there's just so many options of local desserts. We have our own like really, really different kinds of desserts, and we have a history of implementing other countries' desserts or other regions' desserts from the the Austrian-Hungarian Empire. We have the tradition of having other type of foods implemented in our menus. So there are so many stuff, and brewers started to imitate special and live action desserts. So not just trying their own, but trying to imitate from Apfelstrudel to baklava, stuff like that. So that's, I think that trend will stay for a few years as well. But fruited sours are going to be the big hit this summer. Surely.
Right. What do you think, Augustinus? Is that seeing the same trends in Lithuania?
Yeah, I think there will always be a place for classic styles or new classic styles like American IPAs or something low ABV but with fresh and exciting taste, but not so much that that will overpower you after one pint. Yeah, there will always be that place for possession beers, but some people those mentioned hardcore craft drinkers, they want something new, something new experience. So yeah, you also there will also be a demand for triple, quadruple. IPAs, double, triple chocolate, stouts, vanilla, and so on. And yeah, but I think, like I said, there is coming back of tastes for. In IPA lagers, something like that. The new trend of cold IPAs, so-called, that like mix between IPLs and but a little bit more balanced maybe. So I think that will be the. Maybe that's not a new trend, but it should grow, I think.
Right.
In the future,
Right. And just, I suppose, touching on that, because I've had you for an hour and 10 minutes now. So maybe just we finish off. So if you, that's the way the trends are going. Is there anything that you particularly, a style that you particularly want to brew that you haven't managed to do yet? Or maybe you think you never will, or you're going to give it a chance and expect it to be a not a very good seller or what?
I think we will try to go for some cold IPAs so-called because it should be quite a good drinkable beer for the summer. But as usually, summer is the time when you don't have much space for new beers. There is a big difference between summer and winter. Usually, you lack production space in summer, and you lack sales in winter. So, most of our new beers come out during cold season. So, yeah.
But is there anything there that maybe in the Lithuanian market that I don't know, or that you personally like? That there's a style that you personally would love that you've never managed to brew yet.
I can't say that we don't brew so much styles. There are three beers on constant rotation for during whole year at our brewery. And like I said, we usually release some new ones after summer during autumn and winter. We don't go for lagers because there is it is more time consuming. It takes space at fermentation. So I don't think that we'll go for lagers, but maybe sometime. Yeah.
How about you, Adam? Anything you really want to brew?
I've been nagging my head or our head for years now, I think, for a pastry sour. It's Orange Galushka. It's a Hungarian sweet with walnuts and vanilla and butter, and people usually eat it hot with some added sour cream on top with sugar. So it's I just if it happened, I think I could retire.
I'm not stopping for you.
He has his own ideas, so I'm just pushing him into the direction slowly. Budapest Beer Week is coming this May, which is a international craft beer festival and is a place usually to show your newest and craziest and funkiest stuff. So we have something for that as well, and I believe, but even so, you know, like sessionable and creamy and lighter beers are the trend. I think because there are so few good ones, some really, really harsh West Coast style IPA would go really well here. Yeah. But we'll see about that.
Okay. How about you, Misho? What's ChatGPT going to make you brew?
To be honest with you, yeah, there's a lot of styles that I would want to brew in the upcoming, let's say, years. But maybe the most recent that I wanna brew, and maybe that's a Baltic Porter. That's something that we never did, and I wanted to do it for, I don't know, year and something, and there was never the time for it. So yeah, maybe now having a bit more equipment and a bit more fermenters than before, maybe now is the time. But maybe it will be in the winter,
right?
The winter, because still the market in Bulgaria is like people, they perceive the stouts, the porters as a winter beer. So
yeah. Actually, one thing that I didn't hear from any of you that concerns me is there much interest in barrel aging. Because that seems to be a really big trend now.
Oh, yeah. We are now working on a barrel aging project, so to start barrel aging
beer. Yeah, we have one beer. Yeah, we have one beer, but it's we release every year one beer. We had one barrel, 200 liters for a few years, but there was some issue during COVID, and it stayed dry for few months and then got mold inside, so we scrapped that and now got four new old ones. Also, we are planning to release our sour barrel aged sour in 2 months, maybe something like that. It's one of, it's it is the style sour style of one of our beers that we one of our collab beers collaborations. Yeah, so it's red New Zealand red IPA, something like that, but after year in barrels, it gets nice sour taste and aromas, and it's more like becomes more like Flanders red or Flanders old brewing style. So it's yeah,
that sounds good. That sounds very nice. I like really nice, yeah, I like those Flanders reds myself, I must admit. Yeah, Adam, are you doing barrel aged? And I mean, in the barrel aging as well, I suppose we should clarify. I mean, what you're doing, August, is more, like I said, the lighter beer that kind of gains its sourness in there. But then you have the barrel age of the kind of the imperial stouts as well, which just take the thing. So which one? Sorry, Adam, I interrupted you as you were.
No, go on.
Tell me. So I just, sorry. I
yeah,
just,
sorry. Yeah, so we've been barrel aging for 3 years now. I believe, and we're on the heavy side, so we're really around the 10%+ porters and stouts, and we started experimenting, which is a really really interesting way, with Belgian styles into wine barrels, because you know, as a traditionally vine country, we have like so many wineries that you couldn't count them. So there are really, really many opportunities to acquire barrels. We had some red wine barrels beforehand. We've experimented with Tokayasu. So we're trying our hands in this stuff as well. And it looks to be good to try. The responses are getting better and better. And so we usually do this. Our brewer Mate is a big fan of barrel aging, so he's always going to the owners to okay, I just found some barrels on the market, I really need them. So we are trying to have as much as possible.
Right. And do you reuse the barrels then? Like, you're not just using kind of new barrels, yeah, because when you do that, you can blend the beers afterwards as well, I suppose. And do you do a lot of that in it?
We do so, yes. Usually when one barrel is just a smaller one, like around 120 liters or so, we've been blending cognac and brandy, and we've been blending scotch and bourbon. So there are a few instances of those. But we've never used a virgin barrel before. So we've used only used barrels. And, another interesting thing is when you reach the end of the life of the barrel. You see, we have two barrels that have been used twice before by us. And now they are completely lost their intensity. They're completely lost their place. So we're looking at, okay, how else can we use them? What else can they add? Can they add anything to our beers either? Can they add, if we add something else to the beer, or should we just use them as decoration? So so it's a fun thing to, you know, like follow up the life of the barrels. Well,
like when it runs out of the wine, and I suppose then it could go, you could make beer something like Augustinus is making, or do I have my life cycles right here, that you're mainly getting the wood and the kind of the organisms, the yeast and stuff out of it.
That is populated in the barrel. The first filling was also used not for sour beer. It was I think some whiskey style was in the barrel, so we barrel aged that beer for a month and released it in bottles, and the second filling got sour, and we left it for a year, maybe a little more, to see what happens. It was an experiment, and it tasted great, so we decided that we will keep filling that barrel every year with fresh beer, and the It got quite nice. Yeah.
Yeah, so that there's your next path on that when you've used them up. All right, guys. I don't know. Is there any? I've got to let you go because we've had you for an hour and 20 minutes, and you've been fairly generous. Is there anything I should have asked you that you wanted to mention that I didn't, or that didn't come up?
No? Well, I think it was a really nice conversation, and thank you all guys for this. It was really nice for me, and yeah, I think we. If we want, we can talk maybe 3-4 hours more. But I think some of the audience is going to be bored.
Yeah. Well, if you don't seem to have any questions, so maybe it's a good point to leave it there on what the future is and where you're going with the things. And yeah, maybe we can all talk again at some stage in the future.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Perfect. Yeah, of course. All right.
Listen, guys. Thank you. Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for beer. I will try to still hassle shipping companies to send our cans. Later than never.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Well, just let everyone know. There's seemingly it's harder to ship things around the EU than it should be. Some couriers don't seem to cause trouble, but hopefully, yeah, hopefully. Listen, guys, thanks a million. I'm going to play this out and then...
Cheers, bye.
Thanks a million, bye.
Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.